Hi, Derek.
Hi, Lynn.
Now, this is going to be a bittersweet session, I think, because we're going to talk about getting published and getting rejected. Neither of us are completely unknown or totally rejected authors, and anyone listening in might think, oh, well, they've had it easy, but it's far from the case. So we're going to go through some of our darker and maybe lighter experiences so that those writers out there who've yet to do this obstacle course may get a few hints and find out that it's not all plain sailing. So, Derek, do you want to start?
Yeah, this would be like therapy for me. The first book that I wrote that I alluded to in episode one, all that time ago, is a fantasy fiction novel that's now called Covenant. But previously, I hold my hand up for this, was called The Promise of a Rainbow, which may be why it didn't attract much attention.
Oh.
The very first, and I mentioned before we came on air, I've done some digging into a blog. Excuse me, and I've found out some details, but essentially the very first acceptance I had was for a US publisher called Samhain, and I was just thrilled. I cannot tell you the, even to quote myself, the utter joy. So I got the acceptance, and that was brilliant. And it was an ebook publisher back in the days when ebook publishers were quite rare, and they were based in the US. And they sent me a contract, and I was already a member of the Society of Authors, and I contacted them, and they suggested numerous contract changes. So all well and good. I went back to Samhain Publishing, which is now sadly out of business, and went back and heard nothing. And 2 or 3 weeks went by, and I contacted them again. Bearing in mind the contract hadn't been signed because I wanted the changes made. And on the third communication, I got an email back telling me that very sadly, my editor had died. She'd had a heart attack. And understandably, the publisher was in some degree of chaos, but they would assign me a new publisher, which they did. And the new publisher hated the book. That's my word, not theirs. And basically, it sank without trace. However, another publisher, a publisher in mainland Europe, wanted to take the book on, and they decided they would take the book on, but they were a very small publisher. You'll probably empathize with this. It was basically a one-woman show with some support from a couple of interns. They were very committed. They liked the book, they liked the material and its esoteric themes. What they didn't like doing quite so much was getting back to me and actually editing the book, because at the beginning it was a whopping 133,000 words.
Wow.
And by the time my book was on the starting blocks, they went bust.
Oh
It also went to a US publisher. And that was the one I alluded to in episode one. I think it was Tor Books. I'm not positive. So lawsuits in this direction, where they took 1 year, 3 months, and 2 weeks to tell me they didn't want it. But like all good would-be published authors, you submit everywhere. As far as I can tell, the book was submitted to 40 publishers, including independents, and 20 submissions to agents. It was subbed in the UK, the US, the Netherlands, Denmark, and apparently South Africa. Actually, I take it back. Apologies to Tor Books. It was Bayon Books. And I must correct that pub story. I've been offered 5 contracts. One was solely for ebook, which is the one that didn't come to be. One was for a very limited print run. Three publishers wanted author contributions, in brackets, at least Dick Turpin had the decency to wear a mask. And they wanted contributions between £1,000 and £5,000. One publisher wanted me to commit to buying 150 discounted copies.
I'm
And there was
laughing.
one, yeah, and one agent wanted the small amount of £70 to read the book.
Oh, Derek, I'm smiling, but I should be crying, and I bet that's what
It's
you're
funny.
feeling.
It's funny now. I mean, it was over a long period of time, and in a funny sort of way, after that, no rejection has ever been as bad or as convoluted.
Did that help build your rhino hide?
I think after, to be honest, in some ways I was fortunate because the first acceptance was a real validation. I'm sure there were rejections before that, but that first acceptance was amazing, and the tragic circumstances in which it occurred meant didn't really fault the publisher in any way. I suppose it did. I mean, I then went on to self-publish a novel where basically it's died on its ass, I think is the publishing term. But it's out there. So it was good for me. It was a great learning experience. As they say, that which doesn't destroy me can only damage me irreparably.
But don't you think that along the way, when we get rejections, and we get many rejections, it can batter us to the point where we stop or we think, I'm not going there again. I just don't want to feel that hurt and feel so small and feel so inadequate and feel I'm a bad writer. I mean, did any of that occur to you, or were you strong enough to keep going through it all? And not be
Well,
tempted to the point of stopping writing.
the irony is at the beginning for a first novel, I probably was a bad writer. I think, in all honesty, it's a test of commitment. It didn't stop me. It made me wonder whether or not I would ever get the book commercially published. And the answer to that clearly is no. I think I've said to you before privately, if not on the previous recording, the book has had fewer than 100 readers, and two or three of those are me. But as an experience to get the book out there, and I know we've talked about this privately, but sometimes you need to let one book go before you can focus on something else. So even to get it to the point where it was self-published, for me was an end in itself. Did it
Yes.
hurt initially? Yes, of course it did. Like having your heart broken. But after a while, I think a certain jaded sense of humor and a grasp of mathematics tells you that you're not being rejected. It's just that for that publisher or that agent, your book is not considered commercially viable. And by commercially, I mean massively profitable.
And now in the
So,
current
what about yourself?
Well, in the just to pick that up, in the current book climate, to be commercially viable seems to be the dominant reason for picking up a submission. Nothing to do, well, less to do with fabulous writing or fabulous ideas or exploring new issues. It seems to be to do with, can we sell this book? Can we sell it in millions? Can we make a load of dosh out of it? And that's sad because that's a very narrow driving force, and it narrows down the choice for the readers out there. So they're getting the crowd pleasers and the formulaic novels with the same characters. So I think it's harder now than it was when I set forth, oh, about 35 years ago. And my path has been straight downhill, starting at the top and going all the way down. So when I was really young, I think I was still in my 20s, I sent a proposal for a writing scheme to what was then Oliver and Boyd before they were bought up by Longman, and I was in Edinburgh, they were in Edinburgh, and they said yes, to my astonishment. So that was six illustrated writing books for kids at primary school. And
Wow.
it was so gracious. I used to go along to their Oliver and Boyd offices, and I used to get lunch and drinks, and the designers used to come in, and oh, I thought this is really lovely. And that was 3 years of me doing the books, me doing the drawings, and then being taken over by the professionals at the publishers. And they threw a lot of money at it, sold thousands and thousands and thousands of copies. So that's where I started. And then there have been other books along the way, but let me tell you about briefly, I sent a submission to the Women's Press before they stopped being the women's press. They're just the shop front now. The women's press is owned by, or was owned by, Quartet Books, so they had a lot of money. I thought they were a massive enterprise, women's press. May Sarton, big names, you know, the stripy spines that used to be in the bookshops with Farrago on one side and women's press on the other. Anyway, sent in a proposal about mothering, fictionalized account of mothering and my adolescent son. And an envelope came back with a first class stamp on it, which I took as a very good sign, first class stamp. So yes, they were interested. So off I went to London, thinking I was going to a great big office. And I got off the tube and I wound my way around the back streets and I finally found a little door and I went up five flights of stairs and there were two women. It's Kathy Gale, who ran Women's Press and was the best editor I've ever met, and her partner who did all the financial side. And that was it. It was just the two of them, and that they've been my role model ever since. They took my book. Kathy spent months editing it with me, just like I spend months editing with my authors. So she had a profound influence on me. And she always called it a project. She didn't call it the book until we were right at the end. It was always the project. So that was a learning thing, that I can send in a proposal, and while they accept it in a sort of rough shape, they want to mould it and change it, or they might want to mould it and change it. And she did. I called her Kathy Scissorhands because she got so much out of it, about a quarter. But they published it, and it did really well, and it was translated and so on. So let me continue my slide down to the horror story. I wrote my first novel, debut novel, White Lies, based in Kenya, spanning four decades, starting with my father's memoirs of being in Kenya during the Mau Mau uprising. And I sent it, because I knew about the women's press and Quartet Books, I sent it to Quartet Books. And 3 days later, this is in the olden days when you had answer phones, my answer phone was flashing, and there was a message on it, and it said, "Hello, Anayamadola, I love your book. I wanted to publish it. Call me at my office." So I thought, which of my sons or friends has done this horrid joke and sent me into false hope like this? Because it was only a couple of days and this couldn't possibly be, not for a debut novel. So I phoned him at his office. He still loved my book. It was real. It was true. And like you, Derek, I was just over the moon about it. At the same time, I sent it to Tyndall Street Press. So while I was negotiating with Quartet, and already within a week I had covers, had six glossy covers, which one did I like? And all the way along I'd been saying, yeah, but when do we start editing? Because it's my debut novel, it needs editing, it's not perfect. And I signed the contract, being so eager beaver and green, very green. I signed a contract. And then it was a little while after that, I had another phone call and he said, "Hello, Lynn, it's John from Tyndall Street Press." I thought, who? Forgotten all about Tyndall Street Press because I was so wrapped up in Quartet Books. And it took me quite a long time. He started talking about his Liverpool background and how he liked White Lies set in Liverpool. At last I thought, oh, I know who this is, but I've already signed a contract. And he said, "Do you want me to take it on to the management stage and I'll put it forward?" And I said, yes. And oh heavens, it was a complete mess. Put the phone down, thought, now what do I do? Meanwhile, I had signed the contract with Quartet, so I couldn't get out of it, but here comes the big block.
Yeah.
The next thing, I got page proofs. And I phoned them up and said, "What about the editing, Naeem? What about the editing?" He said, "It's perfect. It's perfect novel. You don't need editing. I said, I do. It's my debut novel. It is flawed. And the reason I sent it to you is because I want to work with someone who will punch it into shape. I know it's okay, but it needs some work doing. No, 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 no. We are nearly ready to go to press. So to cut a long story short, I quarreled. I threatened them. And in the end, I had to pay £1,000 to withdraw from the contract because I knew that that book was not ready to go out there. And if they couldn't see the flaws, there was something wrong with them. But okay, it wasn't badly flawed, but it needed Kathy Gale to knock it into shape as a first novel. And while I was withdrawing from that, and it was very unpleasant, it was horrible, I lost Tyndall Street. Too much time had gone, and I think they guessed I was involved with somebody else. So that was the end of White Lies. And I put it in a drawer, and I left it for a year, wept as we do, wept. And then I took it out, and I made my own changes. I could see what was wrong, and I published it with Linen Press. And it's okay. It was runner-up in the Robert Louis Stevenson Award for an emergent writer. But it hasn't sold many copies. And I think if Quartet Books had taken it through, I probably would have sold an awful lot more. So that's my sob story.
Well, that's an interesting point, though, isn't it? I mean, with the European publisher, in my instance, again, editing was not their strong point. Now, whether that's because they just don't have the staff or whether they have this idea, as a lot of people do, that once you've written a novel and as an author you've edited it, it's complete, which is so far from the truth. I've had a novel that I think was on iteration 9 and was so much better for that. I seem to recall, this is a bit of a diversion, wasn't Tyndall Street funded by the Arts Council?
Yes, and they published a book that made it to the Booker shortlist. Something blue. They were very up at one point. They were doing really well. I've not heard from them for years. I don't know what's happening with them. Publishers come and go. Funding comes and goes. It's a revolving door, and especially with the small indie presses, you need a lot of stubborn determination to keep going with no money and no funding. You need to be absolutely passionate to just keep rolling on. So now I'm wearing my Linen Press hat. You might be interested to know that in the story of submissions, I'm getting currently 2 or 3 a day. There's been a big increase since lockdown. So normally it's about 7 a week. It's more, it's double at the moment. And in 15 years, I've taken to publication on our list 10. So you can imagine how many I look at and read. I don't read them all right the way through, but the hit rate is tiny, tiny.
Yeah. What do you look for? I don't know a nice way to say this, but I've been a judge in a competition before, and the first thing that I did is I look for which are the ones I can most easily exclude, really, to focus my time.
No, I do it the other way around. I look for the ones that send in a really cogent letter saying why they want to be published by Linen Press. Another really competent, beautifully written synopsis saying what kind of book it is, why it's different, what their voice is, how it's structured. If they can't do any of that, then I start to have doubts and the bells ring. So I'm then turned to the chapters. I'm looking for exceptional writing that draws me right in, right from the first sentence, right from the first paragraph. And if they can't string a sentence together, well, it's no good. I don't have time to go further.
In a sense, your approach is like a crane where you're selecting things, and mine was like a net where I was trying to just filter out all the of the stuff that didn't make the grade. I have an unusual rejection story for you now. We should really play some spooky music because this one is a doozy. This related to the now there's an irony here because the publisher in question was Robert Hale, who used to do a lot of library books, and quite a few, if not all, of Robert Hale's imprint has now been bought by my publisher. I mean the publisher who publishes me, I don't mean I own it, Joffrey Books, which is a kind of strange karmic turnaround. But here we go. My first spy thriller was submitted to Robert Hale, and this was back in the days again where it was all done by post, and it cost me, I remember this well, not that I'm bitter, it cost me £16 to send it with return postage. And it was their blurb, I think, on I don't even know if it was a website, it's probably the Writers and Artists Yearbook at that point I was looking, but their upper limit was 115,000 words. My book was 109,000 words, according to Word. And I sent it off, and my manuscript was rejected 3 days later because, because the publisher assured me that my book was 130,000 words.
Oh.
Now, here's the science part. I'll try and make this less boring than it will appear. This is their formula. Here we go. You count 50 full-length lines for the average number of words per line.
Yeah.
You then find the average number of lines over 10 pages.
Yeah.
You multiply those two averages for an average number of words per page. Finally, if you haven't fallen asleep, you multiply that figure by the total number of pages in the manuscript, and a part page counts as a page.
Yes.
So the publisher told me, after I rang them up to say, well, that was quick, what the hell is going on? It was standard industry practice. So I said, well, they must have had a website. I said, well, why don't you put that on your website? And then I'd know in advance and would not have wasted £16. To which they said, yeah, sorry about that. It's something we're thinking about for the future. I then wrote up this tale of woe sometime later, and thought I'd see if I could profit from this in another way. So I sent it to the Society of Authors as an article. The Society of Authors got back to me and said, this is very interesting, but we don't feel it's suitable for an article, but we would take it as a letter. Now, what's the difference between an article and a letter? Mm. Payment.
Oh.
I then got back to them and said, but I'd be happy to rewrite it. And they said, no, I don't think this is not for you. So it ended up as a letter. So it was nice to sort of get it out there, but not a great experience overall, I have to say.
That's a long fall from a long novel to a letter. And a letter carries with it something that says, well, this is my opinion and nothing more. Whereas an article maybe carries a bit more kudos and status, as I'm just guessing, that your letter is somewhat diminished, isn't it?
And also, as a freelancer, I could have added it to the portfolio. Yes. But, you know, in the end, and this is, I'm just trying to think how many years it was, let's say, so about 8 years after I wrote the spy novel, it was finally accepted. But the spy novel had a lot of rejections. My favourite, someone had left a post-it note on the manuscript, which presumably was not for my eyes, that said, reads rather like a poor man's James Bond, which amused me doubly because I'd specifically said in my letter of introduction that this is the antithesis of James Bond. You know, it's a working class, I think my tagline was, a working class spy working at the arse end of British intelligence. He's not suave or sophisticated. But clearly, the publisher viewed it in a particular light and whizzed it back to me too sweet.
Well, I think you're putting on a really brave face, Derek. I find it really hard. I've been sending out my latest novel, The Crofter's Child and the Whale, and I'm getting nowhere. One agent asked for the full manuscript within days and then said no, and so on. It's hard. I find it really hard. And like you said, I find it hard to get on with the next project till I've found a home for the one that's still doing the rounds. So it kind of holds me up as well. I was interested to see that Michelle Roberts, who has a host of published novels, had her latest novel turned down. And she was so, she felt such a shock in terms of what it did to her feeling of who she was and her confidence and how she defined herself, that she wrote a book about how awful the experience was. And it's called Negative Capability. And she got that published by Sandstone Press, which is another small indie. But I think for someone who's already found fame like her, to then have a novel turned down, that must be even worse, because as she said, I define myself by my success as a novelist, and someone's turned me down, my publishers turned me down. So who am I? So the writing is very much bound up with who you are and how you think of yourself. I think of it that way. I'm someone who writes. So if I'm being rejected all the time, you have to be careful that doesn't have a rebound effect on how I think about me, Lynn, who isn't the writer. And I have to sort of carve it off and make sure it's Lynn the writer that's being rejected, not Lynn the person. But in the end, they're one and the same. So, I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, I'm a big fan of detachment, to be honest. Obviously, it's disappointing, it's frustrating. I've got an American novel, The Great US Novel, as a friend of mine calls it, although he hasn't read it. And that's been to, I don't know, but I'll conservatively say 25 agents. One said, you have very nice comic timing, which would be great for stand-up, but clearly not for novel. It's frustrating. I suppose as time's gone on, and I can say that with the benefit of having had a few novels out there now, I try not to take it personally because I don't really think it is personal. In the end, your experience has shown that you're far better having an agent or a publisher who really gets your work than having someone who's just a convenient way to see your book in a thriving independent bookshop, if such things exist.
Yes.
Getting an agent is nigh impossible. I'm sure you won't mind me mentioning here, when in a job that I had, my very last day, I'd worked there for about 20 years, last day, voluntary redundancy, I'm on the train and I've sent in, and the agent was Andrew Lowney, who is absolutely brilliant, has been in his way very supportive, actually emails you back in a matter of days. Can you imagine that, an agent? And he rejected the book on my last day of work. I had this fantasy, you know, I'd go from being sort of project manager, desk jockey, to successful and agented author in the space of the same week, but it wasn't to be. But he I think he bucks the trend in that he's very approachable and he sort of tells the truth. So, you know, he will tell you, and he's written lots of articles online. He may have written something for the Society of Authors as well. He talks about, you know, the mathematics involved. I mean, technology has democratized writing and everybody thinks they can write. And to some extent, that's true. But given that we have fewer publishers now, I don't even know if it's still the big five. It could even be the big four by the time this goes out. But there were fewer opportunities, and it is, alas, about money. There were few. I mean, your Linen Press is one of those that, and that was evidenced by the way that Avril Joy was talking about her experience in episode two. So if people are getting this for the first time, they should go back to episode two. That there are some small publishers who have a kind of intimate and supportive and interdependent relationship with authors, and there are big publishers for whom, I'm sure it's not true of all imprints in big publishing houses, but for whom novelists are essentially a commodity. There are no guarantees. There never were any guarantees. The only guarantee is that if you keep writing page after page, you will eventually end up with a book, or stress and anxiety, or both. So the short answer is, I don't really take it personally anymore, but it's a bit like trying to find your way through a maze. And there is always the option of self-publishing, which is a whole other ball of beeswax in terms of commitments and skills and marketing.
So I would leave people listening to this with the message that I do get some superb submissions coming in. I had one a couple of months ago, and I was really excited, and I've signed her and we've started editing. And when that happens, that's a different kind of joy. That's the joy for me as a publisher, opening the door. And as we know, there are lots of gatekeepers, but it's me opening the door to someone who I feel is truly talented and whose book really deserves to be out there and have lots and lots of readers. So I get just as excited and passionate now after 15 years of running Linen Press as I did at the beginning when something really special comes in. And they do come in, and I never know when and I never know how. Sometimes three like buses come in at once, and then I can go a year with nothing. So I want to encourage writers out there who do feel they have something different to say, or they have a unique experience or a unique voice, and that they really understand the craft of writing, because it is a craft. And they're not just sort of putting down their life story and not disguising it very well. But the real writers, I think maybe they know who they are. I want them to come to me, please. I welcome them, and there's a home for you here. I will always pick up unknown and emergent writers, and I like that. I like working with people who are not yet visible and not yet found.
Do you?
Okay. Well, Derek, shall we call it a day for now, and we'll talk again soon.
Pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Bye. Bye for now.